Welcome into the Who's On podcast. I'm your host, Preston Willett, writer with thesaber.com. Remember, you can find all the Wahoo coverage you need for the year on thesaber.com, from feature stories to analysis to, of course, the message board as well. You can also find the Who's On podcast listed there, as well as all the podcasts in the Saber Podcast Network. Please remember to follow and subscribe to the Who's On podcast on Apple and Spotify or wherever you find your podcasts. And always remember to leave a five-star review as well if you're liking what you're hearing. All right, a little different this week. We're going to bring on a guest later on, Connor O'Neill, who covers Wake Forest for Rivals.com. But first, right now, I'm going to talk a little bit about just the updates in the UVA depth chart and the press conferences and everything Tony Elliott is saying going into this ACC opener against Wake Forest. Of course, it has been a little bit since they played Wake Forest, and it's been a lot longer since they've actually beaten Wake Forest. The last time they matched up, 2021, the last win against Wake Forest was 2007, but the last win at Wake Forest was 2002. Of course, you know, these teams don't meet a lot. In fact, Tony Elliott, out of the tradition or the older ACC teams, not the new guys, SMU, Stanford, and Cal, but out of the guys in the ACC from last year, the only three teams he has not faced yet in his tenure are Clemson, who he'll play later this year, Florida State, and Wake Forest, the team that he will play this week in the ACC opener. But real quick on the depth chart, not a lot of big changes this week. Ben Smiley was a name that was talked about last week as someone who was injured going into the Richmond season opening game, but he actually came back and played pretty well, had a sack or half a sack combined with Jason Hammond for a sack in the Richmond game. But he is returning to the two deep. He is right behind Cam Butler. So expect to see him getting in there against rotation. So actually this defensive line is starting to look a little bit deeper because you also get Bryce Carter back, a top high school prospect, kind of waiting to see what he can do at the college level, but he was hurt in camp with a knee injury. And so he is now back and playing. He'll be the backup to Chico Bennett at the bandit position, which means, you know, everyone's favorite walk-on true freshman Billy Kadelka moves slightly lower to the number three spot on the depth chart. But good to see both Ben Smiley and Bryce Carter back, giving this defensive line a lot more depth, a defensive line that has some answers, you know, to give some answers to some questions after the first game where they only had one sack against Richmond. Again, we talked about this with the ball hawk, Ahmad Hawkins, on Tuesday's episode, but it was a little tough to get sacks in that type of game with, you know, how big the Richmond quarterback was in Kyle Wickersham, and also how quick they were trying to get the ball out. And also, Virginia kind of knew that going into it, so they didn't put as much pressure on him. Expect that to change this week when they play Wake Forest. Looking at other spots in the depth chart, noticeably missing word is the two-letter word or, everyone's favorite word to see on the depth chart. Only one or on the depth chart, and that's the one at tight end with Tyler Neville and Sage Ennis. But at cornerback, all four corners last week had or there. But this week, just straight up starters, Kempton Shine and Jam Jackson, who started last week against Richmond, they will again start for the Cavaliers this week. They both looked pretty decent in their Cavalier debuts, both transfer corners. And then Kendrin Smith and Dre Walker also saw heavy minutes and heavy playing time. Expect to see them some more against Wake Forest. Just a little bit clearer the pecking order, you could say, with Kipton Shine and Jam Jackson atop the depth chart. One name not on the depth chart I just wanted to shout out. We talked about the tight end position. Tyler Neville, Sage Ennis, and Sackett Wood. Those are kind of the three guys, all of them grad transfers, very experienced at the college level. But one guy that Tony Elliott was asked about and who actually made a pretty good contribution in the season opener was Dakota Twitty, a former four-star wide receiver prospect who actually got some time at tight end and looked pretty good, had a couple catches, looked pretty solid out there. And Tony Elliott actually shared that when he was at Clemson, they were trying to recruit Dakota Twitty as a tight end. Obviously, he wanted to stay and play wide out, so that's what led him to commit to Virginia back when Marcus Hagans was the wide receivers coach. So he came to Virginia, and then all of a sudden, injuries. He's been battling that for years now, trying to get on the field and stay healthy. Spring camp, they needed extra depth at tight end, so he moved over to the tight end just for spring camp, but kind of liked it. So that's why he stayed there, and He actually brings a really different dynamic to that tight end room where, he's pretty athletic and a good pass catcher. So he probably will be a weapon that, although you don't see him on the depth chart, he will probably get some playing time just because he brings something different to that tight end room than Tyler Neville, say Janis or Sackett Wood does. And so that's kind of your overview of the depth chart. Not a lot of other big notes there. Chris Tyree, you will note he is the technically the starting punt returner on the depth chart, but Antonio Clary took all the punt returns. We'll talk about that in just a second because we're going to hear what Tony Elliott has to say about Chris Tyree, which is going to take us to our press conference rewind for the week. Let's take a look at what Tony Elliott and the Cavaliers had to say. And we'll start off with a bit of a history note here. Trell Harris, the Kent State transfer wide receiver, caught his first touchdown on the first pass attempt of the season from Anthony Calandria. That was the first time in the 135-year history of Virginia football that the first pass attempt of the season went for a touchdown. This is what Trell Harris had to say about that moment.
I mean, it couldn't have gone any better. First catch being the touchdown. So, I mean, of course, I got the jitters down. You haven't played football. I haven't played football since, what, November. So that being the first catch, I was like, oh, okay, now it's go time.
First catch, 35-yard touchdown. Not much better for Trell Harris on the day. He only had one other catch in the game, so pretty quiet after that first play of the season. But a good way to start off your Cavalier career for sure. Trell Harris is one of the starters at wide receivers alongside Malachi Fields, who had himself a big game as well. You can look at on the Sabre.com. Just finished up an article about the receivers and kind of their big playability, but also just the depth in that room and what everyone brings. And also looking at Chris Tyree himself, not a great day for him. Three targets in the passing game, all three drops, although only credited with two drops. If you go back and look at the film, all three were in fact drop passes. So not a great start for Chris Tyree. And Tony Elliott, though, seemingly not so concerned so far about his playmaker from Notre Dame.
Chris, I'm just going to chalk it up to, man, back home in Virginia, wanting to do so well, pressing a little bit, right? And if you look at the balls that he didn't come down with, he takes his eyes off of it because he's ready to run. He wants to go make a big play.
Elliott also went on to say that, he doesn't really see the offense changing anything for Chris Tyree. He's still going to be very much involved in the offense going forward. They believe that he's going to make some big plays for this team. His teammates believe he's going to make some big plays for this team, but they're also not going to try and change up the offense to try and get him more touches. They just kind of think it's going to come within the flow of things. And look, Chris Tyree, there's no doubt about it. He's the fastest guy on this team. He is a dynamic weapon that they can use, especially in the return game. Richmond showed that kind of by not kicking to him, instead kicking to Xavier Brown back there, trying to avoid Chris Tyree at all costs. One of the reasons, though, that Elliott said they did not put Tyree back on punt return was just the sure-handedness of Antonio Clary and kind of with the struggles that Chris Tyree was going through in that game. They kind of wanted to, ease up a little bit on Tyree, not throw too much at him, and especially with the weather conditions out there, Clary was kind of the safer choice, but he does still expect to see Chris Tyree back there returning punts at some point this season. Looking at Virginia going into this ACC opener, they have not won an ACC opener since 2020 when they opened the season against Duke. Obviously, fans will remember that one as the debut of Brennan Armstrong at quarterback, also the debut for a true freshman by the name of Lavelle Davis in that game as well. Both had great games against Duke, but that was the last time they have won a season opener. It's been a three-game skid in season openers. You look back to last year and the year before that, North Carolina was in there. So they've dropped a couple of these season opening games. Syracuse back in, Tony Elliott's first season. So it's been a while since they've actually come out 1-0 in the ACC, and this is a big chance to do it. Also, the first chance for Tony Elliott to start 2-0 in his tenure. That's something they have not done in Tony Elliott's tenure. So, looking at both of those, here's what Tony Elliott had to say about the prospect of facing this Wake Forest team and the opportunity for this program.
It's a program, type of game because we get to evaluate where we are because they play extremely hard. They're very, very well coached. The guys have a lot of confidence. They understand the identity of who they are. And those are all things that we're trying to establish here.
Well, that was Tony Elliott talking about Wake Forest. Talked a lot about his respect for Dave Clawson, who he has matched up against a couple times over the years from his days at Clemson. Now for the first time at Virginia. So a lot of experience with Clawson and the program that he has run down in Winston-Salem. And coming up, we're going to talk a lot more about Wake Forest and kind of preview this matchup from top to bottom with our good friend Connor O'Neill from Rivals.com. We'll be right back with that. Welcome back into the Who's On podcast. I'm now joined by a fellow Elon Phoenix joining the podcast. That's a first for this. I know we're only in episode 4, but we're making first every podcast. It's Connor O'Neill from Rivals.com covering Wake Forest here to give us a little bit more of a scouting report on the Demon Deacons after their opener against North Carolina A&T. Connor, first of all, how is this college football season finding you?
It's finding me good right now. As we're just talking, September is the easy month of football season because it's just football and you kind of get regimented into the routine. It's what comes next with the preseason basketball stuff. And then when basketball games start, that's when my life gets to be, I think, its craziest.
Winter is coming.
Yeah, exactly.
Fall just got here, but winter's coming.
In so many ways. It's kind of chilly out today. Like I've got like pajama pants on as I work from home here.
I know. I'm still in the t-shirt and shorts mode when I walk outside, and I'm regretting it a little bit. I wore pants to the press conference on Tuesday. So there you go, Greg Medea. He always gives me crap for not wearing pants to press conferences and everything. Mike Barber said I look like I was on a golf trip or something, but you know, I'm not in that mode yet. I don't go back and forth. I like to stick with one thing. So I haven't fully transitioned to pants yet, but I'll probably have to do it on Saturday night down in Winston-Salem, a late game, 7 o'clock kickoff down there. But what have you made of this Wake Forest team so far? Just your initial impressions off their season opener against North Carolina A&T last week. I know it was a little touch and go in the first half, but they kind of settled in as things got on.
I think the one thing I wanted to see from Wake more than anything else in their opener was what the offense looked like. It was such a unmitigated disaster last year, and they got quarterback wrong. Like they had Mitch Griffiths waiting in the wings for a couple years behind Sam Hartman. He filled in the opener in 22 when Sam was out with the medical procedure. They really thought Mitch would take the reins and have that job for 2 or 3 years, and he couldn't even hold it for a year. But it wasn't just him. Like their offensive line was inconsistent, to say the least, last year. They didn't get good receiver play. Their tight ends couldn't stay healthy. Their running backs were touch and go sometimes. Like, it just – they were so consistent at such a high level for so long offensively, and it just all plummeted last year. So seeing them run the RPOs, run the spread option, run with tempo against A&T – obviously, the caveats are going to be there when you play an FCS team in the opener. I think that's what more than half the ACC teams are talking about this week.
Yeah.
But, like, you can caveat the hell out of it. It still matters what you go out there and do against scholarship players. And for Wake's purposes, like, they looked to be back to where they were. I don't think we're going to be talking about this offense and comparing it to, you know, 21 is kind of the gold standard when Wake won 11 games. They scored, I think, God, it was either 42 or 45 points a game that year. That was when they had the 70-point explosion at Army. I mean, that offense could sleepwalk through games and score 38 points. I don't think we're going to be talking about this year's offense like that, but they have to get back toward that direction instead of repeating last year or, God forbid, being worse. So that in that frame, like, That's where my main focus was last week. And one game in, they were kind of back to looking like they would in previous years.
Of course, you mentioned that 2021 offense. That's the last time these two teams faced each other, was back in 2021. It's such a weird game because everyone likes to talk about, you know, Virginia hasn't beaten Wake Forest since 2007. They haven't won at Wake Forest since 2002. They've barely been there since 2002. Yeah. And they've barely played at all since 2007. In fact, this is one of the last three teams that Tony Elliott hasn't faced in the ACC, excluding the new ones on the block. It's Wake Forest, Florida State, and Clemson. And he's facing two of them this season, Wake Forest, then later on making his return down to Clemson. But you talked about the offense. Obviously, I think the big thing everyone's looking at from outside the program, I know inside there's a lot of other things to look at, but it's quarterback. Hank Bachmeyer, I think, looks like the starter going into this week. Michael Kern also played last week. Bachmeyer's interesting, though. Virginia briefly looked at him when he was transferring out of Boise State. That seemed like many, many moons ago. He's still playing college football. When I saw it, like the news that he was transferring into Wake Forest, I was like, how is this guy still around? Like, I thought he was like a grad senior when he was transferring, when he was looking at Virginia at first. But I what have you made from kind of those quarterbacks and after their first game out there?
You want to know the craziest thing? You might already know this, because David Hale put it out there, but you want to know the craziest thing about Hank Bachmeyer and
Absolutely.
what you're talking about? I think he's, I believe it's 2 weeks. I think he's 2 weeks older than Sam Hartman. He is
Who was
25
an
years
old
old.
quarterback on his own?
Yes. I mean, Sam Hartman was in college for 6 years, and this
Yeah.
is Hank's sixth year. So, I mean, there was some, whatever your start date of when you start first grade all determines that, I think. I don't think Hank like repeated 10th grade or something crazy, but it's kind of wild. Look, I watched a lot of fall camp practices, and I did not see any separation between Michael Kern and Hank Bachmeyer. I felt better about the way I evaluate quarterbacks when Dave Clawson's telling us there's no separation between these guys. We can't name a starter. The one thing that I kind of honed in on, and maybe it was a little bit of confirmation bias, like it was an early hypothesis that kind of played itself out over 3 weeks. The main difference in what they bring to the table is Hank Bachmeyer takes a few more risky throws, and he'll put the ball into danger sometimes in an effort to create explosives, but it also results in the defense running the other way with the ball sometimes. Michael Kern plays it. He's not like Kirk Cousins, Captain Checkdown. He'll throw the ball into some
Hey,
risky places
that's my
sometimes.
quarterback. That's my quarterback as a Falcons fan now.
I might become a lifelong Falcons fan as of like this week, because I love Jesse Bates.
There you go. Yep.
Who's the safety they just got to? Justin
Justin
Simmons.
Simmons. Yep.
Yeah, I like the way Justin Simmons played. Jesse was one of my favorite players to cover at Wake, even though I only got a year with him. Kern won't take as many chances as Bachmeyer does, but it results in safer plays. When they get out there last week, though, the explosives were the ones that you're taking note of, and they happened with Bachmeyer in the game throwing the ball. It was just kind of undeniable. Like, he just kind of moved with a little more, to steal a Mike Krzyzewski term, he moved with a little more verve. Like, the ball was a little more lively coming out of his hand. It's something that you can't really quantify. You just kind of, when you watch it live and then rewatch the tape, it kind of confirms it. It just kind of had a different energy to it. The offense was in more of a rhythm. The up and every offense wants to be in a rhythm, but when you play a spread up tempo offense, if you're not in rhythm, you're going three and out in like 40 seconds. So it's no good for anybody. It just felt like it was kind of the funny part of Dave Clawson's press conference this week was they released the depth chart about a half hour before Dave's presser starts. And so they released the depth chart with the or there. And that was exactly what I thought they would do. And I thought Dave would kind of play it coy and say, no, we haven't decided yet. Just kind of run it out. I figured that just there's no sense in letting Virginia know what you're going to do 4 days before they're going to know it, because Pete Thamel is going to
Yeah.
tweet it out within an hour of game time anyway. And Virginia's not dumb. They can see the same film that we saw. Like, the offense moved differently with one quarterback in the game. But Dave decided it was just time to tell us Hank Bachmeyer is going to start this game. He was still very complimentary of Michael Kern. He still mentioned the phrasing here is really important. He mentioned wanting to get Michael into the game, not that there's any predetermined. He specifically said there wasn't a predetermined plan like there was last week to get both of them equal reps in the first half, equal opportunity quarterback system. And then pick one for the second half and then go back to the other one in the second half. That didn't really play out last week. There's no plan like that in place. All we know is Hank Bachmeyer's starting. they would like to get Michael Kern in the game, but I don't think if Bachmeier goes out there and throws three touchdowns in the first half, he's not getting replaced. So
yeah,
it's Hank Bachmeier for the foreseeable future. And the foreseeable future, like, that could be the next 2 to 3 months. That could be the next quarter and a half if he has a couple turnovers. Like, they're just it's kind of going to be – it feels like a fluid situation all year.
I don't know what your thoughts are, but there's always a game afoot in college football. But it seems like this year, especially the depth chart mind games going on between coaches and programs, seems to be at an all-time high, going from, you know, Mac Brown and PJ Fleck in Minnesota not even releasing depth charts in spite of each other going into that game. I think Georgia and Clemson did something similar too.
According to people that cover the Big Ten, that's like a Harbaugh thing. Like, Harbaugh was the first coach in the Big
that
Ten.
That sounds like decided, a Harbaugh thing.
he decided he wasn't going to give out a depth chart. So then every other team in the league slowly, like, crumbled under that. And now the whole Big Ten doesn't do depth charts. I don't know if it's changed because he's not there anymore. But that, from a guy who actually used to be in Virginia, Mike Nazoliak, covers Indiana now. And I think he was kind of telling me about that. But,
it seems crazy. The
Jeff Collins tenure was a disaster at Georgia Tech. Like, that guy deserved to get fired. He's not a good coach. He got one thing right.
I know exactly where you're going with it.
That above the line chart is so much more representative to where college football is.
Yeah.
Because every one of these teams, you just have to look at offensive line. Every team lists their backup at left tackle at every offensive line position. Only one of those guys that's listed as a backup is going to enter the game if there's an injury. They all have these contingency plans of, like, if the left tackle goes down, then the right tackle swings over to the left, the right guard goes over to right tackle, and then the guy who's listed at, like, left tackle backup or left guard backup is all of a sudden going to be the right guard. It's not going to be the guy who's listed.
I try to tell people that. They don't want to listen.
Yeah.
Although Virginia actually kind of followed that by the book, because we all assumed going into last week when Mikael Bolley, their starting offensive tackle, was out, that Jimmy Crist, a transfer from Penn State a year ago, would be the backup left tackle instead of Jack Whitmer's, who's listed. But they actually started Jack Whitmer, the former tight end. So for once, they went by the book, and that was more surprising to me.
Yeah, I care about the first depth chart of the year because it just gives you a baseline.
Yes.
But I would be so in favor of just an above the, just tell me who you're thinking about playing. Yeah. You don't even have to break them down into tiers. Just tell me, like, the four or five defensive ends who you think are going to get into the game in significant snaps, not garbage time stuff. Just give me that. And it's just, it's kind of the football video gamification of it. And it's where you have to have it all, like, stacked out in neat and full. It's not neat. Like, they roll packages in and out based on personnel. None of it is neat.
Maybe I got back into playing some more football video games lately, obviously with college football coming out. I try to get into Madden. Even now, they have, like, all these sub positions, like, because they recognize that. So, like, they have, like, your slot corner, they have your third down rush defensive ends, and your coverage linebacker, and, like, so, like, the depth chart after you get past, like, the kicker and the punter, like, it keeps going. And so I guess the video games are starting to recognize that too a little bit, where it's never just a clear, you know, too deep. Well, moving into the actual matchup, UVA versus Wake, we mentioned it earlier. Virginia hasn't won down there since 2002. They haven't beaten Wake at all since 2007, but they also haven't played a lot, so not a ton of familiarity. Tony Elliott, I played this soundbite a little earlier in the podcast before you got on, Connor, but just Tony Elliott talking about facing that Wake Forest team when he was at Clemson and kind of having a lot of respect for Dave Clawson and what he's done there. But diving into this matchup now, what is one key matchup, I guess, that you are looking at going into this week?
I want to see what Wake's receivers do. Look, Donovan Green, when he's healthy, and that's the ultimate asterisk because he has not been healthy over the last 6 years. He's only played, I think the A&T game was his 26th career game, and he's a sixth-year guy. But when he's healthy, he's as explosive as any receiver in the ACC. They've got a reliable slot who's also in his sixth year, Taylor Morin. They've got a slot coming behind him who, you know, shameless plug, I'm writing a story on Deuce Alexander.
There you go.
He's kind of, you've always been able to pick out like who the next star in the slot is at Wake Forest in this offense. It's him. And then Horatio Fields, I mentioned, despite that not realizing his corner was blitzing, he had a really good game against A&T blocking wise, which you don't always call out receivers for, but he was in a couple of plays making an impact, moving his guy down the field. So I want to see how they match up. I know they're probably not going to be matched up on Jonas Sanker a whole lot. I imagine you'll see Sanker in the middle of the field, shading one way or the other. Where Wake's offense really suffered last year and really didn't get tested all that much against A&T was their deep balls. Like when teams load up the box to stop the slow mesh, that thing calls for a deep shot 30, 40 yards down the field. And I want to see how UVA's corners defend that. I want to see if Wake's receivers can kind of take a step forward from what they couldn't do last year and if they can come down with some contested catches, because that was really a staple of, like, A.T. Perry made a living doing that for 2 years. Before him, Scotty Washington and Sage Surratt were all ACC-type players doing it. So those are the plays that I'm going to want to see. I know I talk an awful lot about Wake's offense, but that's kind of – I mean, that's been the focus for them. Like, when they've been good and winning games, they win games, like, 38-31. They haven't won a lot of games 20-13 over the last 5 to 6 years.
We'll get to the Wake defense in a little bit, but just to kind of touch on what you were talking about there, corner was probably one of the weakest spots on this Virginia team a year ago. A whole new cornerback starting duo coming in, Kempton Shine transferred from Eastern Michigan, and then Jam Jackson, the transfer from Robert Morris. The starters right now, Dre Walker and Kentron Smith kind of giving some depth there. But you mentioned Jonas Sanker. The safety trio that they have right now, I don't know if there's a safety trio in college football that's played more football than they have. You got Antonio Clary in his sixth year of football. Jonas Sanker is a senior, and then you have the grad transfer in Corey Thomas, who Tony Elliott likened to Isaiah Simmons. Lofty standards there. He played all right in the first week. He forced a fumble. I'm not sure if we're quite there yet, but 6'4", 221, and usually plays in the slot. But the cool thing about those guys is because of how much experience they have, Elliott and also defense coordinator John Radzinski have talked about how they'll flip positions. They'll play anywhere all over the field. So Jonas has been, you know, kind of man coverage a little bit more this year because you have guys like Clary and Thomas that can cover deeper, but then they'll switch it and someone else will do it, as well as Malcolm Green, who's a guy – used to be at Clemson. Now he followed Tony Elliott over to Virginia.
Also, home was state, familiar.
Yeah, a home state guy coming back to Virginia. But so really experienced on the back end of that defense. The corners experienced, but not in this defense. So I would say for my key matchup, I have a fun one, and then I have my actual one. The fun one is Trell Harris, the wide receiver for UVA, Kent State transfer. Like Capone Blue, his former Kent State teammate. And we asked him who won more of these battles in practice at Kent State. He would not give us an answer, but said it's going to be a good one to watch. So I don't know. Take that how you will. He had a very wide grin. I threw that in my article that's on the Saber.com now, kind of talking about the receivers and how that group played after week one. But a little sly, so we'll see how that matchup goes. But really, the matchup I want to see is the running game for Virginia. It's always been a big, you know, underlying thing in this program. Tony Elliott from day one has talked about he wants to establish the run. You look at those Clemson teams where they had Travis Etienne, you know, running, you know, through the defenses. But Kobe Pace, who coincidentally is a former Clemson player, and actually the last game that he went over 100 yards was against Wake Forest back in 2021. Are you thinking back to it?
Yeah, I'm trying to. That was down in Clemson. I don't remember Kobe Pace like going crazy in that game at all.
Someone threw that stat out at me because I had been going through his stats for an article I did after the game. And it's been a while. He split reps with Will Shipley that year. I think it was the year after Travis Etienne graduated, and he was a sophomore. I think Shipley was a freshman, probably. But Kobe Pace, 93 yards last week, probably could have had more, but they pulled him, halfway through the third quarter. Can this offensive line establish the run? I know North Carolina A&T, what they run for 185 yards last week,
They had
and
a really strong running game. They had a good off a big offensive line. The most impressive part was they had a Virginia Tech transfer, Kendry Christian, who I don't know why he left Virginia Tech. It's kind of weird to me that A&T has a Virginia Tech transfer who's their best running back, and Virginia Tech has an A&T transfer who's their best running back in Bashaal Newton.
it's a trade.
I don't know how trades work these days in college football, but man, that guy could be playing power. Like, he looked every bit the power conference running back
Yeah, he did.
against the power
I
conference
watched
team.
most of the up until Wake Forest kind of started running away with it, I was watching most of it, and he looked really impressive in that game. But Virginia is 5-0 under Tony Elliott when they rush for 200 yards or more. It hasn't happened very often, but when it does, it's usually a good sign for them. Last year, when they upset North Carolina on the road, they ran for over 200 yards. So that's kind of a big deal for them. Anthony Calandra, they're using his legs more. So can Virginia kind of keep that running game going this week against Wake Forest? Is kind of where I'm looking at, is that's a key for this team. And it's probably a key for this team throughout the rest of the season.
The quarterback run aspect of it is really interesting to me because A&T's first quarterback that they put out there, Kevin White, is a running quarterback. Like the A&T guys I talked to going into the game told me about he's a dual every bit the dual threat that you think he is. They didn't really run him. And I always kind of have it in the back of my mind coming from an FCS school. Yeah, it'd be great for FCS teams to win that game, but it doesn't matter for their conference record. It
No.
doesn't help them accomplish anything in their season that they want to accomplish. Like, winning an FBS game only gets you the publicity of beating an FBS team. It doesn't do anything for your season. And so it's always kind of in the back of my mind that, and we always talk about it from the FBS perspective of the big boy teams don't want to show their hand. They don't want to show all that they have against the FCS team. Well, it goes both ways. Like, the FCS team doesn't want to run their running quarterback out there 20 times
Yeah.
in the season opener against bigger and stronger athletes for the most part, get him crushed, and then not be able to win for the next 3 weeks because you just had him spent. And that's the little what's the word I'm looking for? Anecdote about this. I always remember this because it happened my freshman year at Elon. And we all remember Armani Edwards went nuts in the big house at Michigan. He didn't play the next week. Like, he was so banged up that App sat him the week after that game. And then I think the next year they went to LSU and everybody was like, is App gonna do it again? Like, are they gonna win in Death Valley after winning the big house? I think they didn't even play him down there, because they were a national championship team, and winning in LSU was not going to mean anything for them trying to repeat as a national champ.
I completely forgot that they played LSU that year too. It's just
It
kind of
was either 2008 or 2009 that they went down to
okay.
LSU.
It's kind of, that's crazy. It just thinking back on that, but yeah, and I was surprised as much as UVA ran Anthony Calandria, because last year Des Kitching's the offensive coordinator rarely ever called any running actual run plays for Calandria to use his legs. It was all just him scrambling. But this game, ton of quarterback draws. A little bit RPO, like they were actually kind of using his legs. So it looks like that's going to be a big part of the UVA offense without the sacks. And I don't know if you've seen them, but Anthony Calandria took two really just kind of it looked like a freshman running around back there with his head cut off, ran into the back of his offensive lineman, kind of scrambled around, lost 20 yards on one play when they are in the red zone. Other than that, he would have had over, 70 yards rushing on the game. So he's been pretty dynamic with his legs.
Because we as a football society have still not graduated to counting quarterback sacks against rushing. Like,
Yeah.
I don't want to go down that rabbit hole, but it's just
That's a
ridiculous.
pretty big rabbit hole. Yeah. Looking now, going from the key matchup to a player to watch, I'll take UVA, you take Wake Forest. Who is one guy that you're looking for with this Demon Deacons team going into this game?
So I'll kind of look at it from a little bit of a redemption angle. And because he's, maybe it's because we were just talking about UVA's rushing game, but I want to watch Branson Combs, a linebacker, started against A&T. I think he'll start this game too. He's listed as a starter without the or designation there, but he was a transfer from Southern Illinois who came in with, by the end of the by the end of the spring and in the spring game, Dave Clawson was telling us how great he was and how well prepared he was coming from the FCS to a power conference school. They raved about him throughout fall camp. He had a rough game against A&T. I think not that Pro Football Focus is the end all be all of player evaluation,
Of
but he
course.
was in the bottom five on grades for Wake's defense. He was missing tackles. He was over pursuing. He was depleted at least a time or two on blocks. It did not go well for him. And I want to see if that's what it's going to be, or if there were first games with a new school nerves, if there were jitters. If that kind of thing affected him and he's able to move past those and play up to what we were told he could be and what he showed himself to be in fall camp, I think that's the key to kind of not only making UVA pass the ball probably more than they want to, he's going to be probably used in some spy situations on Calandria to make sure he doesn't get outside the pocket and turn a well-covered play into a 20-yard gain. You just that'll be backbreaking for any defense.
Yeah, I'm going to go defense too. Last week, I got into trouble. My player to watch last week against Richmond was Chris Tyree, the wide receiver transfer from Notre Dame. Zero catches, all three targets, he dropped them. I'm keeping an eye on him. I'll do one eye on him and one guy on a guy on defense that I'll talk about in a second. But listening to Tony Elliott talk about Chris Tyree in the game he had, it makes a lot of sense. It's his first game back in his home state. He's playing Richmond. He's from the Richmond area. Obviously, I'm sure he had a lot of family there, and he's trying to make a big play out there. And so sometimes your eyes get a little bit ahead of where your hands are. And so that kind of makes sense in that regard. Elliott said that they're not really changing up anything with how they use him in the offense or, how they get him the ball. And so they expect him to kind of bounce back from that. But I'm still keeping an eye on him because, I mean, you can't teach speed. And if there's one thing that guy has, he was a former five-star running back that got recruited to go to Notre Dame. He's got speed and he's making this transition to receiver now. So I'll keep one eye on him. The other eye, you talked about him earlier, and it's Jonas Sanker, because I think defending this offense, the slow mesh offense that Wake Forest runs, the safety position is so critical just because that's a lot of what the quarterback is trying to read. And so having a guy like Jonas Sanker back there, first team all ACC safety, a guy that has had a lot of preseason accolades coming into this and had a really good first game out there. He actually didn't grade as well as Antonio Clary in the PFF that you just mentioned. He didn't grade that well, even though to us it looked like he was having just as good, if not better, game than Antonio Clary was. That just kind of shows you sometimes. And I didn't know this either about PFF. I'll just go on a quick tangent here. They changed the grades kind of throughout the week. Because I always looked at it Sunday, Monday morning, and I was like, all right, that's the grade for the week. And that kind of, that's how you perceive someone for the rest of the week. I didn't know they're changing that, updating it throughout the week. I don't know.
There's usually the initial grades that come out the day after the game. And then when you check it 2 days later, sometime in the morning, probably not like 6 a.m., crack of dawn,
Yeah.
but late morning, those grades will be changed. The one that turned me onto it was that game I referenced earlier, the 70-56 game or 70-63, whatever it was, when Wake won at Army. They had a safety, Travion Red, who had like a grade of 100, and it was like, how in the hell you have somebody on your defense that gave up? I'm beating myself up for not remembering if Army scored 56 or 63, but it was like the worst defensive game you could possibly have and still win a game. And yet this guy gridded out at 100, but Army ran a fake field goal where Travion Red came from the other side of the field and picked off this lollipop throw from a backup quarterback or punter, whoever it was, the holder, and ran it back the other way for a pick six. So because he made one instinctual play there, he graded out at 100, and then it was changed later in the week. And it was
readjusted,
like,
Oh,
so I guess you realize that, like, one pick six doesn't mean the guy played an absolutely perfect game.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't quite realize that. But yeah, I think Sanker, just kind of in his instincts and stuff, especially going against this type of offense, he's the kind of guy that I'm looking at. He was my preseason pick to lead UVA in interceptions. He only has one career interception, so I'm really going out on a limb here, but he had 11 pass deflections last year. So I'm like, if he can just get one more hand on those balls, he's got to get at least two or three this year. And so that's kind of why I picked him for that. And that's why I'm going to pick him again here. Right. It's prediction time. I know we all love to guess random numbers and throw them up on the board. I don't think I was too far off in the Richmond one. I can't remember what I had, but prediction time. I'll go to you first. What do you see for this game?
I think points. I think,
first off, it's like a 1.5, Wake's favored by 1.5, I think, going into it.
I looked today. I think it was at 2.5 or 3.
2.5. Okay.
It opened. We now there's so many sites and everybody wants to sites up first, their lines up first. So I run into trouble with like who actually determines where the line opened. But I swear I saw one, it was on FanDuel, that had it 1.5. Mm-hmm. I put it up that it was 1.5. And within like an hour, I had somebody on Twitter asking me, like, what are you talking about? It's 3. And I was like, well, I didn't take the screenshot, but it was 1.5. I swear.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is because I have more faith in the offenses in this game or less faith in the defenses, but I see something in the 30s, maybe like a 34-31 game. I guess I would be going with a spread and kind of giving Wake the advantage because it's a home game.
Yeah.
Like, all due respect to Virginia, but Virginia is not one of the ACC schools that comes in and owns the far side of the stands at Wake.
They have not been. No.
Yeah, they're not Virginia Tech. They're not Clemson. They're not Florida State. So I think home field plays a little bit of a role here, and I would kind of give the edge to Wake, but I think it's close and I think it's high scoring.
Yeah, I'm going to lean a similar direction, but I think this kind of I earmarked this game before the season. This is kind of, you know, both these teams picked bottom of the ACC. Someone's got to win this game and pick up some momentum going in, you know, to the rest of the season. And
yeah,
Virginia, for their schedule, their first 5 games are so crucial for them. And so this is one of those games. I'm going to stick with, I loved what I saw from Anthony Calandria last week. I think he can really build off of that performance. So I'm going to go close still, 38-34 Virginia. I think they just barely get it done. But again, like, it's not something we've seen consistently from this team. And, you know, this isn't the same Wake Forest team that we saw a couple of years ago. So, you know, that line being so close, like, I think the 1.5 was right. I think it should be that close because it does feel like a little bit of a toss-up going into this game. And I wanted to mention real quick, guy we didn't mention for Wake Forest, DeMond Claiborne, had a really big game against North Carolina A&T. He's also a Virginia guy, but you know, he looked really good in that first week. And so I guess, you know, I picked the running game for Virginia, but also watched the running game for Wake Forest because I think Richmond had 147 yards against Virginia on the ground.
DeMond is just, he's different. And
I loved him coming out of high school. I was like, this is going to be a really good back. And when I saw him went to Wake Forest, I was like, that makes a lot of sense.
He's this is Dave Clawson's 11th season at Wake Forest. He's had 1,000 yard rusher, and it was Cade Carney in 2018. It's always been a 2 or 3 man or 2 or 3 running back system for Wake. I think DeMond has a legit chance to be the second 1,000-yard rusher under Clausen at Wake. He
That is
just
a crazy stat, though, because Kenneth Walker was at Wake Forest for
he had the
a
same
little
number. He had
for
the
a
same
little
number
bit.
of yards both years, 578.
That's incredible. And just what seeing what he did at Michigan State quickly now, you know, before we head out of here, we gave our predictions, everything for the game. Your general thoughts about the ACC through, I guess, kind of 1.5 weeks.
Yeah.
It's been a weird first week of the season, and that's saying a lot because a lot of these teams were just playing, you know, like you said, FCS opponents. But you said what happened with Florida State 0-2 already in the ACC. Chalk that up to, you know, all the preseason media poll that had Florida State winning the ACC. Really tough to bounce back from starting 0-2 in the ACC. Virginia Tech losing at Vanderbilt, Clemson just getting pummeled by Georgia. Your thoughts initially on kind of how the ACC is shaping up?
I would love to live in a world where we can talk about how great it is for the ACC, that it's a deep conference and that it has teams like Georgia Tech and BC that look like they can contend with the big boys. I just think that the perception of this league being where it is, Florida State being left out as an undefeated ACC champ last year, Clemson falling off because Dabo refuses to cover up his recruiting misses through the portal. We're in about worst case scenario for the ACC right now. And I know that's crazy to say on September 4th. I know that so many things can happen between now and December 21st or whatever the first game for the playoff is. I went into the season thinking the ACC has to get multiple teams in the 12-team format and they have to win games when they're there. I have – And the other thing with the perception, we can dismiss the preseason polls and all what we think in June and July and how we think we're smart in those months. To some degree, where you start in the preseason matters. I watched this happen with 2021 Wake Forest. Wake Forest was unranked, and they went from unranked to 8-0 going to Chapel Hill, and the first CFP rankings came out, and they were ninth. And they were theoretically the best team in the ACC. Like, they had beaten Florida State that year. They had beaten Virginia. They had beaten Louisville. They had beaten good teams. And they're ninth, and they were behind either one or two one-loss teams from either the Big Ten or the SEC. It just it matters where you start. And I think it's a really big problem that the litigation boys are 0-3, that Virginia Tech goes and loses to the designated doormat of the SEC. I think it's terrible that now basically your hopes and dreams for a national champion are pinned to Miami, which is coached by the guy that didn't know to take a knee last year and lost the game. I just don't see, like, Maybe I've doom scrolled too much, but I just don't see this working out well for the ACC this year.
Yeah, I'm not as doom and gloom, but I'm definitely not optimistic about it at this point. Like, I thought Miami looked really good in that first week, and I think Cam Ward is the dude. Like, if that guy is in New York at the end of the year for the Heisman ceremony, I would not be shocked at all. And they've got a lot of other good players on there. The only reason I worry is because, yeah, Mario Cristobal, not the best with in-game coaching decisions. That's the only reason I worry about Miami.
I look at Miami and I look at Dave Doran at NC State, and I think their coaches are going to find a way to go 9-3. I don't look at those coaches and what they've done in their histories and think, yeah, they're going to go 11-1 or 12-0. I think they're going to find a way to hamstring their team and lose a game or two that they shouldn't lose. And that's not what you want when you're talking about those two teams as possibly your two best.
No, going into the year, I completely agree with you. You had to get at least two teams in the end of the college football playoff. At this point, I don't know if there is a second team that can do it. I mean, I don't know if Clemson can bounce back and get into that discussion. I mean, they still don't look like they have anything going offensively for that team. And, you know, obviously they've been a big topic for a lot of ACC people this week just because of Dabo and, you know, what is he doing with this program? You know, they have the talent. You look at the composite ratings and everything, and they have all these guys. Obviously, Florida State, just take the rest of the year off. Like, you're done after 2 weeks. Like, there's nothing else you can say. Like, I'm sorry, Mike Norvell.
The problem is now Florida State can play the spoiler.
Yeah.
Like they still
And
have
I'm
they
sure
still
they
have a
will at some
talented
point.
roster.
Yeah.
They still have one of the probably three or four most talented rosters in the whole league. So now they're going to win games that the ACC doesn't need them to win.
It'll be like coastal chaos for everyone. Everyone gets a little taste of coastal chaos now.
Coastal
If from
chaos was better for the league when you could count on the Atlantic champ being in the
Yes.
14 playoff.
Yeah. Now it'll be coast to coast coastal chaos as
Yeah.
we get ready to make some of these trips. And that's when it's really going to get crazy, is when teams are having to go to Stanford or Cal or SMU, 1 week and flip around, come back the next week or something. Long season to go. But Connor, I want to thank you so much for coming on the Who's On podcast to give us a little insight into Wake Forest. I will see you down in Winston-Salem on Saturday night, the ACC opener for Wake Forest and Virginia. Thanks again for everyone for listening to this week. We'll be back again next week with more of the Who's On podcast. We'll see you then.